So just to start, the Rambam, of course, Rabbi Moshe ben Maimon, often known as Maimonides, born in 1138, some date him to 1135, but I think scholars agree he was born in 1138, lived until 1204. He was born in Cordoba in Spain, very much a pillar of the Sephardic tradition, both intellectually in terms of halacha, poet of the Sephardic tradition, and ended up in Egypt. In the course of his life, he was also a physician for the Sultan, so obviously very accomplished in many, many fields and facets of life. The Rambam's major works, so his two most major works, perhaps, that he's known for are the Mishneh Torah, the Yad Chazakah, which is the 14 volumes of Halakha, where he took the canon of the Gemara and organized it in a clear fashion, in a very systematic way. So the Mishneh Torah was his halachic magnum opus, and the Mor Nevuchim, the Guide of Perplexed, was his philosophical magnum opus. And it's interesting because both of those works sort of get at the poles of emphasis, where on the one hand, the Mishneh Torah in certain parts of the Jewish world is parts of the Rambam that's best known and most emphasized and most appreciated. And on the other hand, especially outside the Jewish world, people know Rambam more for the Guide of the Perplexed, for the Mor Nevuchim. And depending who you are, so you might emphasize the halacha and de-emphasize the importance of the Mora, or you might look at the Mora, but you might not have opened a Mishneh Torah ever. It's possible that people can see Rambam in that sort of bifurcated way, but it's obviously important to, at least in my opinion, to appreciate the holistic aspect of who the Rambam was. Another one of Rambam's works was Sefer HaMitzvot, where he enumerates each mitzvah of the 613 mitzvot and explains what they are. And he had a system for how he came up with this. So that's actually sort of important as a partner with the Mishneh Torah, in terms of, because in the Mishneh Torah the Rambam enumerates also what the different mitzvot were, and that plays into his organization. But Sefer HaMitzvot is also an influential work. Rambam had tshuvos. He wrote responsa to halakhic questions that he got. Sometimes the tshuvos are not entirely consistent with what was written in the Mishneh Torah. I've seen a couple of examples of that, but Biazimei, yeah, tshuvos. But the very first of all of his works was a commentary on the Mishnah. Parish on the Mishnayot. He wrote this some 10 years before he wrote the Mishneh Torah. Mor Nevuchim comes 10 years after the Mishneh Torah. So Parish HaMishnah is the first thing that comes up. But most of these works have in common is that they're written in Judeo-Arabic. So even the Parish HaMishnah, which most commentaries in the Mishnah are written in Hebrew or some sort of rabbinic Hebrew, the Rambam's commentary in the Mishnah was written in Judeo-Arabic. The only thing that was written in Hebrew was the Mishnah, Torah. In the case of the Parish HaMishnayot and the Mora Nevuchim, is that they were both translated by Shmuel ibn Tibon. So anytime we're reading one of these works in Hebrew, again except for the Mishneh Torah, we're actually reading a translation from the Judeo-Arabic, which is actually quite fascinating. The Parish HaMishnayos was his first work. So he has, within the Parish HaMishnayos, he has three major noteworthy introductions. So first he has a long introduction to the Mishnah overall. He goes through a history of Torah Sheba'al Peh, which he also does an introduction to the Mishneh Torah. He has a history of the Torah Sheba'al Peh, history of the Oral Torah, how the Mishnah came into being. He has a philosophical discussion of the difference between a Navi and a Chacham, between a prophet and a sage, which we'll even see in what we're doing, that these terms are going to come up as being important. So he has an introduction to the Mishnah itself, which is it's not necessarily that extraordinary to have an introduction to the whole Mishnah, but this introduction itself was noteworthy. Another major introduction that the Rambam has within the Perusha Mishnayot is he has an introduction to the 10th chapter of Sanhedrin. The 10th chapter of Masechet Sanhedrin is the only chapter in the Talmud that is entirely Agadah, that's entirely not legal. Is the best way to define Agadah, is it being not legal? In some ways it's, you could call it theology, you could call it stories and legends, but it explores aspects of faith and theology. So that whole chapter, that's what that chapter does in the Talmud, and the introduction to Sanhedrin in the commentary on the Mishnah, that's where the Rambam lies out the 13 principles of faith. So the Animamins, or the Yigdal, which we might be more familiar with, were not formulated in that way by the Rambam, but he actually has a more prosaic depiction of what the 13 principles of faith are. But that's actually included in the commentary in the Mishnah and serves as an introduction to the tractate of Sanhedrin, because that begins with the idea, Kol Yisrael Yesh Lahem Chelek Ba'olam Haba, every Jew has a portion in the world to come. So the Rambam discusses the principles of faith that whole idea is contingent upon. And finally, the last major introduction that's included within Perush Mishnayot is his introduction to Avot, to what we often call Pirkei Avot, is actually a part of the Mishnah, Masechet Avot. And the Rambam has a big introduction to Masechet Avot, which is often known as the Shmona Prakim. It's often known as eight chapters. The name Shmona Prakim, eight chapters, is the Rambam's is more of a colloquial name to this work. The Rambam himself did not call it the Shmona Prakim, but becomes known as the Shmona Prakim because there's eight different sections to it. So if you were to print out the whole thing in Hebrew, the whole thing comes out to be something like 30 pages. So we'll take it part at a time. But there's eight different sections to this part. That's why it's known as the Shmona Prakim. And otherwise, Rambam might have called it just simply the introduction to Avot or something of that nature. But the name eight chapters is something that's become sort of more colloquial. So what is Shmona Prakim all about? So obviously, it's an introduction to Pirkei Avot. Pirkei Avot is often translated as Ethics of Our Fathers. So some people say that Shmona Prakim deals with ethics. I think in both cases, simply reducing it to ethics is a little bit of a misnomer, because it's true that Pirkei Avot deals a bit with ethical and moral behavior, and that's obviously important from the standpoint of Derech Eretz Kama LaTorah, that acting in a certain way is something that's very foundational to being a Torah observant Jew, something that can't always be legally defined. But it's not just ethics, but really about the person's entire character, both Bein Adam L'Chaver and Bein Adam L'Makom. Certain parts of Pirkei Avot obviously deal with character traits in terms of how we relate to other people, but Pirkei Avos also deals with our relationship with God and what it means to be a pious person, especially what it means to be committed to Torah. So Pirkei Avos is the only part of the Mishnah that's not entirely legal. It can't really be defined by legal, but it's also not just merely ethics. Professor Isidore Twersky, who taught at Harvard University, was an expert in the Rambam, among many other things. So he discusses how the Rambam's introduction to Pirkei Avot, he calls it a psychological and philosophical essay dealing with the soul and its powers and the general principles of ethics. So on the one hand, you have aspects of ethics, but you also have elements of psychology and philosophy and things were related to the soul. Professor Lawrence Kaplan at McGill University, he takes sort of different ways of understanding the Shmona Prakim, Professor Twersky's way of understanding it, the idea that it's just ethics, He feels that many of the summations of what Shmona Prakim are very vague, and that's partially because there's not necessarily a clearly unifiable theme in the Shmona Prakim. So Professor Kaplan takes all these ideas and puts them together into a definition that says that the Shmona Prakim is a psychological and philosophical essay that sets forth, on the basis of a theory of the soul and its powers, general principles of ethics designed to lead the student to walk on the path that leads to the level of the perfection of one's soul, as particularly exemplified in the person of the prophet. We'll see in the introduction, in addition to the fact that the Shmona Prakim is an introduction to Pirkei Avos, there's an introduction to the introduction as well, which is quite short, and hopefully we'll get a chance to look at tonight. But here in the introduction itself, we'll see that the Rambam talks about Pirkei Avos becoming a chassid. Being pious leads one to the level of becoming a prophet. And we'll have to define what all of this means. So Professor Kaplan's definition is a bit more expansive. But here we get, we have words being thrown out here like psychology and philosophy, the importance of the soul and what the soul can attain. We have something about ethics, about something about being perfection, about perfecting the soul, perfecting the personality. And yet, it can be quite vague. So what Professor Kaplan suggests is that Shmona Prakim in many ways deals with the tension between law and philosophy. Because law might be, he would say, law or halacha might be focused on obedience versus disobedience. You have a mitzvah, so you either fulfill the mitzvah or you transgress the mitzvah. If you have a negative mitzvah, you have something you're not allowed to do. If you don't do it, then great. If you do it, then you've transgressed. So you have sort of that, you know, that very clear-cut category. On the other hand, philosophy is about virtue and vice, moral character, so that's much harder to define in terms of one particular action, but much more encompassing in terms of personality. And the goal, at least in the Rambam's world of philosophy, in the philosophy that he studied, was to attain virtue and to avoid a character that's vice. And Professor Kaplan's chiddush is that the Rambam was coming to argue that having that really these two things aren't contradictory, that virtue and vice and obedience versus disobedience are not these entirely separate categories or separate ways of thinking of life, but they really serve each other. And Rambam's argument is that, according to Professor Kaplan, is that developing a moral character cultivates obedience, that being obedient to God cultivates a moral character and a knowledge of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Because ultimately, for the Rambam, the goal of life in general is not just to do mitzvot and to avoid averus, but to really come to a knowledge and unification with God. So according to the Rambam, the way to do that is first to follow mitzvot, and then you have a certain moral character, and through that you come through knowledge of God. As a result of this, Professor Kaplan argues, virtue takes precedence over obedience, because obedience is really instrumental towards character. So generally speaking, you need to be obedient in halacha in order to get to character, but he gives different examples of where perhaps if halacha was going to come in conflict with achieving a certain character or achieving a certain virtue, then the virtue would win over the obedience. That's not to say that mitzvahs perhaps don't serve other purposes as well. There could be different political, sociological reasons for mitzvahs as well. But the Rambam, according to Professor Kaplan, is arguing from the lens of Shmona Prakim that mitzvahs come to serve, to cultivate, again, a virtue, which leads us to a great connection with Kadosh Baruch Hu. Any questions up until now? Any comments? Okay. Yeah. Was that okay? All right. So, in his introduction to his commentary on Shmoneh Prakim, Rabbi Moshe Bleicher, again, in this particular sefer, so he talks about, again, how Shmoneh Prakim is about understanding our soul and how it can reach its highest level, how we can reach a certain level and put all of our potential into action. And he emphasizes, like we mentioned, that some of the definitions of what Shmoneh Prakim is coming is about is that it's the Rambam is doing a bit with psychology and philosophy as it comes to contact with psychology, and that's a part that Bleicher here comes to discuss. He thinks about he grapples with sort of the psychological aspects of the Shmoneh Prakim. So what does psychology have anything to Torah? Rabbi Bleicher asks. So the answer is that psychology is meant to restore a certain level of, let's say, you know, mental or emotional stability that allow us to lead normal and functional life. So that's something I would say is by and large, if it's true for the, it might have been true in times of Rambam, certainly true in our part that, that we have some sort of, when we have some sort of imbalance between sort of our emotional state and where we need to be in order to lead a functional life. Obviously not talking here about, social psychology or neuropsychology, but psychology in the sense of mental illness and therapy and the like. So the goal there is to sort of restore our balance. And that's what Rabbi Bleicher calls sort of the klei ha-nefesh, that things like that moods like joy versus sadness. So those are, you know, tools of the soul that create sort of our temperament, our mood, and that affects, you know, how we are and how we function. But psychology does not necessarily deal with defining, you know, what's good or bad for us, right? So the goal of a psychologist or a therapist might be to help us be mentally stable, or even not talking in terms of stability versus instability, but just to be happy and to feel fulfillment. But they're not necessarily coming to tell us what is good, what is bad, what is moral, not immoral. Sometimes that might be the case, but generally speaking, a therapist, I would say this is true, a therapist's job is to be sort of not judgmental, but the goal is to help, you know, whoever that person is in front of them reach their full potential and to feel fulfilled. So the analogy he gives is that if somebody breaks their leg, so the goal of the doctor is to fix it, but the doctor's concern is not what one does with their legs or you know, any part. You know, eye doctor's job is to restore eyesight, so their job is not to tell you, you know, what to look at, or somebody who, you know, an audiologist, you know, their job is not to, you know, tell you what to listen to or not to listen to. Their job is just to fix it. Same thing with psychologists, is that when it comes to our mental or emotional condition, so their job is to help us feel content, to feel joy, but not necessarily to tell us how to achieve that. So on some level, you know, that might not be entirely true. Sometimes, you know, that discussion does happen in therapy, and could be that, you know, the psychologist or therapist that might suggest that certain things are more productive towards those goals than other. But again, generally speaking, a psychologist or a therapist comes as being sort of non-judgmental and helping you find your own personal path. But that would explain why a, you know, psychologist doesn't have to, for an individual to go to therapy, to go to psychologist. Psychologist doesn't have to be firm, doesn't have to be a religious person. They just need to be competent in mental health. They need to be able to help you with what's going on with where you're at. There's no separate, as Rabbi Bleicher describes, no separate psychology books, you know, one for religious Jews and one for, you know, for Christians and one for Muslims. But there's a general inyan of mental health and emotional health that is shayach to everybody. And that's the realm of psychologists. But Torah serves a very different purpose, because the idea living a meaningful Torah life is not just about being happy, but being content on a certain path. So while psychology might be and restoring temperaments might be klei hanefesh, might be the tools of the soul, the purpose of Torah is mahus hanefesh, to talk about, you know, what the essence of the soul is, what the meaning of life is. And that is, in terms of Torah, is to connect with the Kadosh Baruch Hu, or connect with Kadosh Baruch Hu. One needs to have an neshama, one needs to have a soul. Soul is our conduit to connecting with the Kadosh Baruch Hu. So in order to be able to use our soul to come in contact with the Kadosh Baruch Hu, we need to understand how it works, and we need to channel and direct it to that purpose of coming closer with the Kadosh Baruch Hu. And that's the difference between psychology and the Rambam. Psychology is about a person feeling content and having a purpose in life, but the Torah would value that in as much as it helps a person use those tools in order to live a meaningful religious life. So in that sense, you know, psychology and the Rambam are connected, but the distinctions that is important. You know, on the one hand, in order to be spiritually healthy, one needs to be psychologically healthy. And sometimes Torah and spirituality itself might be the answer. So, you know, why are rabbis in the position of counseling, and why do rabbis need to know psychology? Because, because there is this sort of interconnectivity between being content and having insights into Torah and how Torah can be in spirituality can be meaningful. But on the other hand, rabbis aren't psychologists. So we're talking about sort of two different ideas, and that's what the Rambam's coming to discuss in Shmona Prakim. That Shmona Prakim is talking about how to make the use of our soul in order to direct it in a way that's going to allow our lives to be meaningful and to connect with the Kadosh Baruch Hu. And there's certain elements here that sound psychological, and in some ways they are, but in some ways it's a different domain than just plain psychology. So with that, let's look at the Rambam's introduction, and then next week. We'll get a little more into the meat of what the Rambam has to say. So this is an introduction to Shmona Prakim. I'm going to actually read most of this in English, because the Rambam did not write this in Hebrew, so I don't feel like we're losing the original. If we really wanted the original, we'd read it in Judeo-Arabic. But seeing that very few of us are fluent in Judeo-Arabic, I think we can use license to read in English just to make sure we're on the same page. So he says, we have already explained in the introduction to this work at the beginning of the commentary of the Mishnah, the reason the author of the Mishnah had for putting this masachas in this order. So here's nothing to do with sort of the content of Shmona Prakim, but the Rambam, in his interest in conceptualization and systems, as he is in the Mishnah Torah, so here in the parish in the Mishnah, he explains why the different masechtot are in the order that they're in. So he mentions in the introduction, he explained why Avot comes in and Seder Nezikin. Briefly, that's because A, it's important for judges to have the character traits in Pirkei Avos in order to do their job right. True of rabbis as well, but also so that people can hopefully recognize that the virtues of those who are in those positions. So then he writes, we have also mentioned the great benefit that is to be derived from this treatise from Avos, and have promised many times in preceding passages to discuss certain important points at some length in commenting upon it. For although the contents of the treatise seem clear and easy to understand, yet to carry out all that it contains is not a simple matter for everybody. So at the surface, when we look at things in Pirkei Avos, so it might, you know, look at something, Ezu Chacham Halamim Yikodem. So it sounds like a very you know, easy thing to do. Sure, I'll learn from anybody. It's easy to ezu ashir asameach b'chalko. Yeah, I can be happy with everything I have. All sorts of examples, you know, shali shalcha shalcha, the, you know, the different traits that a person has, and this particular example that I'm giving that a person should, you know, somebody who's pious, somebody who says that what's mine is yours and what yours is yours. So all that can sound conceptually easy, but yet it's not. When we think about it in a deeper way, to really attain those levels where we actually internalize and actualize those ideas, it's actually not. It's not so simple as easy. Rabbi Yisrael Salanter was very famous for saying that it's much easier to learn all of Shas than to fix one character trait. So even though some of the things in Pirkei Avos, you know, especially compared to other parts of the Mishnah, where it's conceptually might be easy to understand what it means, to actually live that way is not so simple. Moreover, not all of its content is intelligible without ample comment. With all that, it leads to great perfection and true happiness. For these reasons, I've deemed it advisable here to go into more lengthy discussion. Okay, so besides, our rabbis of blessed memory have said, read this, so the line in Bava Kamma is, Haiman debayo lemevei chasida lekai milei de'avos. So the line in Bava Kamma says that a person who wants to be pious should practice the teaching of avos. So here the Gemara makes the association between being pious and learning Pirkei Avos and fulfilling the teachings in Masechet Avot. That is a place you're going to look. Even before Masechet Yesharim and other things, look at Pirkei Avos. Now, there is nothing that ranks so high with us as saintliness, unless it is prophecy, as it is saintliness that paves the way to prophecy. Chassidus mevi'a lidei ruach HaKodesh. And as thus, their words make it clear that the putting into practice of the teachings of this tractate leads one to prophecy. I shall later expound upon the truth of this assertion because it depends upon a number of ethical principles. And it's important to note that, according, again, for the Rambam, having Ruach HaKodesh is one of the most important things. That becoming a prophet through intellectual knowledge and perfection is one of the greatest things that a person could do. So learning Pirkei Avos is very important to those means. It's not just, you know, a nice thing to learn and a nice way to live your life, but it actually has very high value for the Rambam, because we learn Pirkei Avos and you actualize and you embody everything that's in Pirkei Avos, so then you become a chassid. And once you're a chassid, once you're somebody who's pious, then you can attain Ruach HaKodesh. Ruach HaKodesh for Rambam is not necessarily something that's, you know, mystical, and it's not merely about being somebody who's, you know, messenger of God. This is Rabbi Bleicher explains it. It's not about being a messenger of God and being Yirmiyahu and prophesying the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. That's not necessarily what being a prophet is about, but it's about being totally connected, intertwined with the Kadosh Baruch Hu, where all your actions and everything you do, you have a Kadosh Baruch Hu so much on your mind that the two can't possibly disconnect it. And the state of the soul and all its inner facets is about reaching this level. And that's why the Rambam goes into all this sort of psychology of the soul and understanding how the soul works, because if you want to be able to get to that level of Ruach HaKodesh, to have that sort of connection with the Kadosh Baruch Hu, so you have to be able to understand what it means to work with the neshama and to work to that level. So so that's something that's, you know, very foundational for what we're learning. Okay, so final paragraph in the introduction here. Further, I deem it fit to preface the commentary on the respective halacha proper by some useful chapters from which a reader may learn certain basic principles which may later serve as a key to what I'm going to say in this commentary. Know, however, that the ideas presented in these chapters and in the following commentary are not of my own invention. Neither did I think out the explanations contained therein, but I have gleaned them from the words of the wise occurring in the Midrashim and the Talmud and of their other works. Okay, so obviously the Rambam is going to, you know, write an essay about what it means to be somebody's chassid, and someone's going to reach Ruach HaKodesh, so he's obviously very interested in what Chazal had to say about this. But he goes even further. He says, as well as from the words of the philosophers, ancient and recent, and also from the works of various authors, as one should accept the truth from whatever source it proceeds. Right? In Hebrew, this is a very foundational line. Ushma ha'med mi misha amara. Hear the truth from wherever it comes. It's worth teaching the Shmona Prakim even just for this one particular line, because it's a very famous line of the Rambam, and something that I find to be very foundational. Of course, it relates to Pirkei Avos because of that line I mentioned before. Ezu chacham halamin mikol adam, who is wise, one who learns from everybody, and everybody, it says kol adam, not just Jew, but really any human being. But this line is very important. He actually embodies it, because he says, sometimes I may give a statement in full, word for word, in the author's own language, but there's no harm in this, and is not done with the intention of glorifying myself by presenting as my own something that was said by others before me. Since I just confessed my indebtedness to others, even though I do not say so-and-so said, which would necessitate useless prolixity. Sometimes, too, the mentioning of the name of the authority drawn upon might lead one who lacks insight to believe that the statement quoted is faulty and wrong in itself because he does not understand it. So the Rambam is saying you should accept the truth from whoever says it, and the Rambam says that that's his guiding principle in quoting philosophers in this work, but he does not attribute at all anything that he copied, and there are places where he copied verbatim. So it seems, but he didn't make any attributions, not because he wanted to plagiarize. He's admitting that he did this. He's not trying to plagiarize, but he's afraid that there are people who do not agree with him, that you should accept truth from wherever it comes. And in the look at a statement, they'll say, oh, that's from Farabi. That's obviously treif, so I shouldn't accept what the Rambam says. So the Rambam wants to present it as something that's holistically in line with Judaism. So here I could go into a whole discussion, obviously, on Torah Umada, one of the guiding principles of Yeshiva University, that Torah can be harmonious with what I'll call worldly knowledge. It's noteworthy here that this is not just science and math, which for many parts of the Torah world are perhaps more acceptable, but even for the Rambam, philosophy is something that's very important. Of course, today we're in great need of a chokhmah from wherever we can find it. We need wisdom from wherever we can find it in order to fight the pandemic. So that seems to be very obvious, but something that the Rambam has to spell out. There's a midrash in Eicha Rabba that says, "Im yomar lecha adam yesh chokhmah bagoyim tamin." If somebody tells you that there's wisdom among the nations, then you should believe them. Yeshtar b'goyim al tamin. But there's no Torah among the nations. But there's Torah among the nations, and you shouldn't believe them. So what's the difference between chachma and in Torah? So chachma, again, I think would generally refer to wisdom, certainly science, and the need for chachma today to fight coronavirus. So that's something obviously that exists universally. We should certainly embrace that, but even the things is where Rabbi Bleicher talked about psychology versus what the Rambam is doing in Shmona Prakim. So certain aspects of psychology are chokhmah bagoyim, that people who are not necessarily guided by the Torah have come up with very useful and important ways of being able to understand the human mind and the human personality, and there's a lot of wisdom from there that which we can glean. But the difference is that Torah b'goyim al tamin. So Torah in some ways is wisdom. The wisdom and Torah obviously are not totally separate. But Torah refers to perhaps the way that we act and what we believe our life mission is and how we conduct ourselves and what our values are. So some of those things. Again, we might be able to glean wisdom from the outside, but in terms of really shaping and molding and fashioning what that is for us, so that's something that has to come from within the Torah. And it seems like it seems to be really the whole purpose of Shmona Prakim. On the one hand, Rambam is embracing outside wisdom in cultivating Shmona Prakim, but on the other hand, if he had to write it, it's because that what already existed was not necessarily sufficient for Jewish ideals. So the Rambam takes it and he fashions it in a way that's not just chokhmah, but becomes Torah and something that is authoritative in terms of what a an appropriate Jewish approach, a Jewish lifestyle would entail. So the Rambam says that he's quoting certain individuals. So we'd see in certain places that Aristotle obviously impacted the philosophy that the Rambam has, but scholars seem to agree that the Rambam is not even necessarily quoting Aristotle, but an individual named Al-Farabi. Al-Farabi was a Muslim and an Arabic philosopher who also was a student of Al-Farabi lived closer in time to the Rambam, but a student of Aristotle. And the Rambam seems to be gleaning from him. So here it is, Rambam's quoting from Al-Farabi because he thought he had important ethical ideas and philosophical ideas to contribute, but he doesn't quote him verbatim because he knows that certain people aren't going to have it that way, right? A lot of this makes me think a bit about Russell Lovechik. I mentioned before that the Rambam, sometimes, people either look at the Rambam through Mishnah Torah or through Morah, don't let them cross. So, what came to Rav Soloveitchik also, there are people who, either saw him entirely for his shirim or saw him entirely for, his creative philosophical contributions. So it's important to embrace both. But here also is where Rambam is a gadol ador. He has to avoid mentioning he's quoting Al-Farabi in order so that people won't harass him. And certainly something that plagued Rav Soloveitchik, that not everybody took him seriously enough because he was willing to quote from the outside. So let's just finish up here. So he said, therefore, I prefer not to mention the authority, for my intention is only to be of service to the reader and to elucidate for him the thoughts hidden in this tractate. I shall now begin the chapters which, in accordance with my intention, are to serve here as an introduction, which consists of 8 chapters. So this is his introduction to Shmona Prakim. So again, just to summarize, we're going to be looking at, this was really just an introduction to the Rambam's 8 chapters, which are going to give a lot of insight philosophically and psychologically to what it means to be a holistic Jew, what it means to attain a certain level of contentment, but also connection with the Kadosh Baruch Hu that involves certain introspection and a lot of spiritual work that allows us to come closer with the Kodesh Baruch Hu. So there's elements of philosophy and ethics and psychology that will come in here, and we will see what the Rambam has to offer us in the coming weeks. Okay. Right. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you, Rabbi.
Thank you.